Stone Cold Steve Austin steals the show, and Bray Wyatt attacks Mick Foley. Your full Raw reunion review show starts right after this message. So, you guys know that we live in a world that's full of social media, technology, information sharing. What about your privacy and security? Have you guys thought about that? I take it very seriously, and that's why I purchased the Simple Proactive Privacy and Security book. It's by a military veteran, Alex Summers, who got fed up and worked to reduce the digital tracking of his family. It's the book that Silicon Valley doesn't want you reading. I mean, think about it, guys. We all make phone calls, okay? We do channel surfing, we do web browsing, we all know we're all over social media. Everything we do gets tracked. This book can help you avoid the bait of phishing attacks, remove yourself from 27 people locator websites that share our names, addresses, and other private information. There's a password manager and password generator. Protect your calls, your texts, everything. I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're using iPhone, Android, if you have a PC or a Mac. Right now, this is the book that you guys need to check out. It's only $9.99 for paperback or $4.99 for Kindle. I'm going to be putting up a link on my Twitter, which is @the WWE podcast. So check it out. I would really recommend, if you guys want to take this privacy thing seriously in a day and age where everything is shared, definitely check this out. Again, I'll be putting a link on my Twitter feed, or just go on to Amazon and search the Simple Proactive Privacy and Security. Again, that's Simple Proactive Privacy and Security, and get you and your family secured today.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Stone Cold Steve Austin returns to Monday Night Raw. Main events the show and stole the show, as only Stone Cold Steve Austin can. And this time, not with any stunners or cans of whoop-asses or stomping mud holes, but rather a very heartfelt promo that felt very real, and I think was, and of course filled with lots of beer. So I'm going to break that down in just a moment, and all the other craziness that happened on Monday Night Raw. Bray Wyatt that attacked Mick Foley with the mandible claw. The 24/7 title storyline that was woven throughout the fabric of the show. The Click versus the original Click and the NWO, which suddenly have an alliance. I'm not even going to get into that and all the plot holes there. And, of course, we also saw the return of John Cena, who opened the show. So a very eventful Monday Night Raw. I think a very memorable show overall, and one that I'm sure will spike the ratings. So we're going to get into all the nitty-gritty in just 1 second. But first, I would like to welcome you guys. This is the WWE Podcast, a podcast that comes to you 4 times a week on Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So tomorrow will be my SmackDown Live review, and then Thursday will be my co-host joining me to break down all the just nonsense this week. And I mean that in really the best of terms. I mean, I think it was so far a really good week for WWE. So far. I mean, we still got SmackDown Live, but so far, so good as we head towards SummerSlam, which is August 11th. August 11th. And that is not far away either, as SummerSlam is about 2 weeks away. 2 weeks from this coming Sunday. So, welcome, guys. This is the WWE Podcast, as I said, and you can follow me on Twitter @theWWEPodcast. And if you are so inclined, drop a rating and review on iTunes, which is now Apple Podcasts, and anywhere that you can review the show. I really would appreciate it. Any feedback that you provide, trust me, is useful to the show, and I thank everybody who takes the time to do that. So, alrighty. Well, let's jump into Monday Night Raw, because it was, man, let's just start with Stone Cold Steve Austin, because that is, I think, where most people are thinking. It was the lasting image with Stone Cold Steve Austin coming out after all the legends were on stage, and it was led by Hulk Hogan. who did his greatest hits about "Let me tell you something, brother," and "What you gonna do," and all that wonderful mumbo jumbo. Which, you know what? Like, I'll mark out for it too. I don't care. I know it's beyond overdone. I know that Hulkamania doesn't really exist anymore. I understand all that, but I would still pop if I were in the arena, just because, hell, it's Hulk Hogan. Regardless of the racist statements he said in the past, you know, do you think that he hasn't tried to make amends? I mean, come on, how long are we supposed to punish somebody? You know, so I would still mark out for him. The audience in general seems to be very receptive to Hulk Hogan. And yes, we also saw the return of the Nature Boy, who looked very good. I was happy to see that he was not looking ill. He didn't look like he just rolled out of a hospital bed and tried to just make his way to the arena. He looked healthy, and it was good to see. Obviously, we had Ron Simmons, who made more than one appearance on the show, the Boogeyman. I don't know how he's a legend, but nonetheless, he was on stage. Candice Michelle, who won the 24/7 championship briefly, and honestly, who didn't? Seriously, I mean, Jack Briscoe and Pat Patterson were also in that list of those who won the 24/7 championship. I'll break that down a little bit more. And let me just say about that, when WWE gets to the end of this 24/7 championship run, they are going to need a forest of trees to print out the list of those who have been champion. I mean, it's starting to stretch my believability just a bit, to where, as much as I enjoy the comedy of it that occasionally works, it's really starting to detract at times, and I'll get into that, you know, in just a few minutes. But I wanted to start with Stone Cold, who comes out and owns the stage, owns the ring. The crowd was hanging on his every word. What's he going to do? What's he going to say? Is someone going to interrupt? Is he going to deliver a stunner? And to my slight disappointment, there were no Stone Cold stunners. So I would have traveled all the way to Tampa to just see him drink beer. And hey, that still would have been worth it. But man, I love the Stone Cold stunner. And I made a prediction on Twitter that him and Kevin Owens would somehow cross paths. They did not. I was surprised by that, because I think Kevin Owens could have got the rub big time from Stone Cold, having them come face to face. Like, there's some tension there. Heels interrupt. They both deliver stunners, and Kevin Owens is better for it and gets more of the rub from Stone Cold, the biggest name in professional wrestling history. Instead, they just have him come out and just cut a very heartfelt promo. One that was not sappy, but done in a way that was Stone Cold, in a Stone Cold style. It wasn't done in a mushy way, as he said he wasn't going to do. And he didn't. And he just talked about the guys and gals that he came up and down the road with, and that, you know, everybody's family, from the people on stage to the camera crew to the people that set up the ring. Everybody felt like family, and that was pretty cool to hear from Stone Cold, who stayed in character most of the night but felt real. I mean, he started discussing a interaction that he had with Ron Simmons at the hotel the night before. The podcast that he did with Hulk Hogan about drinking beer. And it's just stuff that felt a little bit like, hey, peek behind the curtain and see the guys and gals behind it and the human form of it. I mean, he was able to make it feel special and heartfelt without being mushy transparently. And only Stone Cold can do that. And boy, he still got it. If he ever wanted to get back into the ring, I think that he could just jump right back on, like riding a bike. Yes, it would take him probably 6 to 8 months to get back into ring shape if he dedicated himself, but his promo skills are there. His presence is still there. The reaction from the audience is still there. And he's been retired from professional wrestling for 16 years. And he still gets the biggest pop of the night. The what chants have been going on for 17 years, and every time Stone Cold comes back, it's almost like he gives the what chants a shot in the arm. Like, oh, hey, I know the what chants aren't cool anymore, they're starting to fade out, but when I'm here, you guys know what to do. And the fans just eat up the what chants. They just will not die, and the gimme a hell yes, all of that is still there and very much alive. And it's a testament to Stone Cold Steve Austin and the contributions he made to this business as being the biggest name of all time ever. I would put him against Hulk Hogan in terms of success. He is the single biggest draw in the history of professional wrestling. He still garners the biggest reaction again, and he hasn't been an active performer for 16 years. How many guys that are retired that come back for these all-star nights and these reunion shows and the 25th anniversary and whatever anniversary show or the 1,000th episode, all these special shows that they do and they bring the legends back. How often do you get a retired performer coming back and still getting the same reaction that they did as if they were still an active wrestler, performer? How often does that happen? Name one person. You can't. Even Shawn Michaels, the heartbreak kid, the showstopper, the main event, Mr. WrestleMania, still does not get the same reaction as he did as when he was an active wrestler. And it's just amazing that Stone Cold, it's almost as if time stands still. And no matter how long time, how many weeks, years, months, whatever go by, when that glass hits, it's the same reaction. Maybe a tick higher when he was actually active in the Attitude Era. I mean, they were selling out arenas. It was a much more younger male demographic that were very, very vocal. And so yeah, okay, if you want to put it head to head. But for the most part, he's got 90 to 95% of what his reaction was. It's astounding. So, but Stone Cold didn't talk about himself. He talked about the guys and gals and told stories behind the scenes and then toasted everybody in the ring. And it was a cool moment, and it felt genuine and it felt real. And, you know, you don't see that too often. And it's really cool to see Stone Cold ending a Monday Night Raw. It just feels right. And this is one more thing I'll say about Stone Cold, and then I'll move on because there's a lot of other things that happen on Raw. When Monday Night Raw starts, and there's always that pause between when the announcer, you know, gives the introduction and when they pan out to the crowd, and there's that, I don't know, 5 seconds or so, 10 seconds or so of silence of who's going to come out, what's just about to happen, because you know the beginning of Raw is usually start hot. I just can't break the habit of my mind, the muscle memory of my mind, at the beginning of every Monday Night Raw, to not anticipate or hope that at the very beginning you hear that glass break. Because for so many years, a Monday Night Raw from, I would say, 97 to 2003, really, was the heart of Stone Cold's career, at least the part that drew the most money. It was Monday Night Raw after Monday Night Raw after Monday Night Raw of the glass breaking and him coming out, cutting a hell of a promo, him coming out and dropping somebody on their neck. I mean, beer, just so many times that it was just a such a crazy, strong emotional connection and investment in his character that muscle memory just hasn't left me. And the same goes for when there's heels, I don't know, destroying a baby face, outnumbering the baby face. I still imagine Stone Cold's music hitting and him coming out to make the save, and, you know, the White Knight coming to make the save. And I just can't get that out of my brain. Not that I actually think it's going to happen, but I'm still imagining it happening. He's left that big of an impression. I don't think I'm alone here. I really don't think I'm alone. Okay, well, let's move on, because this wasn't all about Stone Cold, although he did steal the show without lifting a finger, just lifting a beer. And so I think the next item that I wanted to talk about was what I started with in the beginning of the show, and that is Bray Wyatt attacking Mick Foley, which was unexpected, yet it was also safe, because I don't want Mick Foley taking any bumps at this point. Nothing, not even a flat back bump. I don't want to see him doing anything. I am over Mick Foley trying to do anything. I don't want him ever trying anything ever again. He doesn't need to. He can be a special referee. He can come out and cut a really good promo about what the Hell in a Cell means every single year, whatever. Fine. But I don't need him in a match, in a program, or even taking a single flat back bump. I just don't. So this is a great way to get beyond that, but also have Wyatt attack him. So, Foley comes out and talks about his memories, his favorite memory, which he chose as him winning the WWF Championship for the very, very first time in January of 99 with the help of Stone Cold Steve Austin. And the music hit his everything kind of slowed down. It was the lights going off. I love the intro to The Fiend. And then The Fiend attacking Mick Foley with his own mandible claw, which, again, is a great way to get around Foley actually taking a bump, because there's nothing to do other than just kind of lay there and let Bray Wyatt stick his fingers in your mouth. I mean, that's it. That's it. That's all Foley had to do, and I think it was effective. People popped for Bray Wyatt, and I got a little concerned, however. This is not a critique yet. This is just me trying to figure out what WWE is doing. I'm not understanding. So Bray Wyatt cuts these awesome vignettes week after week after week for months. People are into them. They look forward to them, myself included. And then he appears on Raw last week and attacks Finn Balor. The crowd pops, loves it. The holy chance, right? They all love it. And even after he attacked Finn Balor, people didn't care. They're just like, oh my God, it's Bray Wyatt. We love what you're doing. We love the mask. We love everything. This is a great repackage. This week, he comes out, attacks Mick Foley, and still gets cheered. While the cheers weren't as heavy as when he first came out, I didn't hear any boos. Now, it looks and it appears as if WWE is presenting Bray Wyatt as a heel, or attempting to present him as a heel. He has yet to attack a heel. Finn Balor, babyface. Mick Foley, babyface. So, Bray Wyatt is clearly trying to, well, the creative is trying to position him as, Vince McMahon is trying to position him as, more specifically, if you want to get down to exactly who's responsible, as a heel. Yet, creative, or yet the audience is responding in the opposite direction. So what do you do if you're WWE? Do you continue to swim upstream and say, nope, I know better, we have something better, they don't know, we have something better, ignore the reactions, we're going forward? Or do they do the damn smart thing and go with what the fans are telling you? It's not the wacky, untraditional, bizarro world, or whatever stupid label they want to put on the fans of Long Island. They were in Tampa, Florida. Tampa, Florida. Not exactly a massive market when you think about the top five markets of WWE. Dare I say, maybe not even in the top 10. So, my question to you is, should WWE, and this is a legitimate question because I'm close to critiquing, but I'm not going to. This is a question posed to you guys. What do you think WWE should do? Should they swim upstream or go with what the fans are saying the last 2 weeks and book him as a face? You guys know my vote. Oh, and one thing before I go any further, I would like to give a shout out to Terry Mittig. I hope I pronounced that right. He is the latest, newest patron of the show on patreon.com. Very much appreciated, Terry. I hope you enjoy your ad-free experience. And thank you so much for being a patron of the show. If you guys want your shot at getting no ads, you can go to patreon.com/WWE podcast. You guys get every single show ad-free. Zero ads, zero plugs. It is a completely seamless listening experience. So head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast and you can get your ad-free experience. And also, just a quick note, I'm going to be doing video soon that's going to be exclusive to patreon.com. It will not be featured anywhere else other than my Patreon feed, so that will be coming soon. I'm still working out the logistics of my little setup that I have here in my mom's basement, which I'm kidding, of course, but I do have some equipment that I'm learning how to use, and video editing software and things of that nature. So that is coming, and coming soon. So just a little bit more of a incentive to check out Patreon. Okay. So Also notably absent from the show was The Rock, Undertaker, Brock Lesnar. And when was the last time The Rock even appeared on a WWE show? I mean, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was the Brooklyn Raw that he just randomly decided to show up and talk sexual to Lana and then give Rusev the people's elbow. I think that was the last time WWE or The Rock was on WWE programming, I believe. I don't even think... No, he wasn't. He wasn't at WrestleMania last year or this year. So, yeah, it's been quite a while since The Rock has appeared on Raw. And maybe they'll try to bring him back for another reunion show. I'm sure they extended the invitation. It would have been pretty damn cool to have him out there and have him and Stone Cold in the ring at the same time. Man, imagine that. I know they did it at WrestleMania 30. That was damn near 6 years ago. Think about that. Think about that. So, alrighty. So we had the Bray Wyatt incident, which I posed a question to you guys, and give me your answers on Twitter at the WWE Podcast. I'm curious to see, or on email at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. All right, so let's move down the line here. John Cena returned to Raw, opened the show, and got a very, very positive reaction. I think fans have, even the ones that have booed John Cena over the years, I think have given up on him turning heel, which may be the perfect time to turn him heel if they ever bring him back, but what do I know? But I think the fans like myself, who have viciously booed Roman Reigns, have kind of moved on to Roman Reigns as the guy that is the next heir apparent to John Cena, who is also being billed the same way as, hey, WWE wants you to cheer me, but I'm not going to give you a reason to cheer me. I'm kind of the laid back, too cool for school, nothing bothers me. Hey, man, just come on in this ring. We'll do this. Like, Mr. Nothing Bothers Me, Cool Hand Luke. Like, that is Roman Reigns, which can work against him big time, in my opinion. So John Cena comes out to a very, very positive reaction, and probably the biggest positive reaction I've heard in, my God, I don't even know when. I don't have a time frame because I don't know the last time that happened. So he comes out and he ran down a list of fellow legends that are going to be in attendance as if he's kind of the WWE spokesman at this point. The Usos come to the ring and try to coerce John Cena into becoming the doctor and throwing down a rap, which he did. He brought up the fact that they were both arrested, which was pretty damn funny. I love that. Rikishi came out and they all were going to do the dance, which I don't know. Look, as a 14-year-old boy, 15-year-old boy, 16-year-old boy, I was entertained by it. I don't want to see John Cena do it. I just don't. But we didn't get it because the Revival interrupted with D-Von Dudley, who apparently is just a heel for the night and inexplicably joined them, but we'll roll with it. So we got a tag match between the Usos and the Revival, and it ended up being the Usos defeating the Revival and D-Von Dudley. Booker T was also out for commentary during this match. I don't know what to say about it. I mean, the Revival are kind of lost in the shuffle, even though they're the champions. The Revival, I like that they are trying to present them as mainstream and putting them in the same camera shot as John Cena, so I understand that. And it's certainly a step in the right direction to getting them noticed, even though they're the champions, which is a bit backwards. But look, I'm fine with it. The Usos ended up winning, though, so maybe they're next in line for a championship opportunity again. So we had also the 24/7 championship, and I do want to discuss this for just a couple of minutes, if you'll allow me to. The 24/7 championship is a championship that's not supposed to be taken seriously. It's a championship that anybody can win at any given moment, and the creative aspect of this is unlimited, which probably tickles everybody in creative that they really can't mess up. And that there is no limit. And the entertainment part of sports entertainment is right up their alley. Because a lot of the writers are not wrestling people. They are just there for the entertainment value. So this tickles everybody pink. And so we get the creative for the 24/7 championship on this show. That was just off the wall. I mean, I enjoy Pat Patterson as champion. I thought it was fine. It's funny. You have Jerry Briscoe, the Stooges, make their return. And Candice Michelle was champion at one point. Alundra Blaze was champion at one point before she faked trying to put it in the garbage, as she did with WCW when she appeared on television there. I don't know who wasn't 24/7 champion during Raw. Ultimately, it ends with Drake Maverick regaining, thinking he's going to consummate his marriage. And then R-Truth appears out of nowhere for the final pinfall as he escapes with Drake Maverick's wife in the limo. As Drake Maverick stands or sits there, kneeling in front of Carmella, as he realizes that both his championship and his wife are gone. Okay, so the good. Here's the good. I enjoyed Drake Maverick and R-Truth. They simply have good chemistry. It's a great use of both talent that would otherwise not probably get a whole lot of airtime if it was a serious angle of any kind. R-Truth is talented at comedy. It's fun to see people hold the championship that would never, ever, ever get another championship run in WWE under any circumstances. It's funny. I mean, you think of the Stooges with Pat Patterson and Jerry Briscoe. Good stuff. Like it. And the creative for this can go anywhere. It's wacky. It's not supposed to be taken seriously. The cameras are just perfectly and happen to be around every corner that it needs to be, just by chance. So all of those camera angles I just threw out the window. I need to turn my brain off. I need to shut it down. I don't need to put it in sleep mode or log off. I need to shut it down to enjoy the 24/7 championship. And that sounds like a slight. It's not. Because I enjoy sometimes turning my brain all the way to off. So that's fine. That's the positive of this championship. And particularly what I'm talking about is this past Monday night. Now, some of the things that I'm not so cool with on this whole 24/7 championship is that it takes the unbelievability to a whole nother level. To the point where I don't even think my one-year-old son would believe it. Now, what I mean by this is, yes, the camera angles, just everybody, just happenstance that cameras are in the perfect position at any given point for anything that needs to be there, right? I think WWE as a whole, in any storyline, is guilty of this, but particularly with the 24/7 championship of camera angles and cameras that are there that shouldn't be, you know, whatever. They're in the men's locker room, they're just everywhere, behind a corner, behind a door, whatever, that they just shouldn't be there. So, beyond all that, I think my biggest gripe with the 24/7 championship is simply how easy it is to win. And what I mean by that is, look at what Pat Patterson did to win the 24/7 championship. Just think about that for a minute. Think about that. Pat Patterson ended up giving some very, very light kicks and gets the championship. I mean, he defeated Drake Maverick with a couple of kicks and just stuck his foot on Maverick's chest to become the 24/7 championship. 24/7 champion. I know that Boogeyman appeared to terrify Maverick, but really? You couldn't just lift a shoulder? And R-Truth and Maverick are also kind of guilty of this. I know they're trying to incorporate some two counts. They can't get their shoulder off the ground? It's just anytime. That's how everyone's winning is roll-ups. Surprise roll-ups. Can they win? Can they change hands by a different means? Please. Does everything need to be a surprise roll-up? Can it just be maybe a chair shot to the back and then a pin? Or you attack him from the front and somehow maneuver your finishing maneuver, if done safely, somewhere outside the ring, backstage, if your finisher is able to be done safely in that environment, and have him win that way. A roll-up? That seems to be WWE's go-to lately, too. It's not just in the 24/7 championship that's guilty of this finish. It's actual matches that happen in the ring with true professionals. and guys that are billed to be real deals. How many times have we seen Samoa Joe lose to a roll-up after going through a 20-minute grueling match only to lose to a roll-up? Oh, and we'll get to Samoa Joe, too. Don't worry, with Roman Reigns. So, that's my only gripe, is just how easy it is to win. I understand it's supposed to be quick, I get it. But you can't have somebody just, I don't know, hit them with an inanimate object or maybe brass knucks. Something different. This behind-the-back roll-up stuff is, I think it's overstaying its welcome. All right. Let's see what else happened here. Just so much stuff. Maria tears down Mike Kanellis again, and it ended up being a Ron Simmons special. Him yelling "damn" with the bullhorn. That's fine. I love the "damn" thing. I don't know. I think we all do. We don't know why. It's just perfectly said by Ron Simmons. Yeah. There's nothing better. All right. Now we get to Roman Reigns defeating Samoa Joe. And Samoa Joe is exactly where I feared he would be. Right back down to talking a big game, only to lose the match. It's a very telling match because there was a clean finish to it. Joe cut a damn good promo. He's very believable. Runs down the Usos. Say it's embarrassing. Roman Reigns comes out as the Bloodline to defend his family. And then Roman Reigns, Mr. Too Cool for School, talks about how, so we're both from the same island. You know what happens next, right? And then he calls Joe a coward, and they eventually have a match. And Roman Reigns goes over clean. I say this match is telling because it's a clean finish. And it tells you where WWE views these two in terms of pecking order. And it's clear that Roman Reigns is 2 to 3 pecks, or levels, probably a better word, above Samoa Joe. It's a damn shame. Have we run the course of the Roman Reigns experiment yet? Can this be over? I'm not saying to fire him. I like him on the roster. He's a guy that I would put him on my roster in my top 5 picks. That's not my problem. I'm not saying put him in NXT. I'm saying refresh his character. Maybe give him some new gear. Maybe give him, God forbid, new entrance music. Or maybe Roman Reigns himself needs to adjust his personality to actually look like he cares, and that it doesn't look like he'd rather be anywhere other than here. It's got that feeling that Roman Reigns has other plans or had other plans, but he was inconvenienced by having to be there that night. It feels like that every single night. Like he's got something else on his mind and he'd rather be somewhere else. I just get that feeling. And he's an amazing athlete. Yeah, he overcame cancer, all that lovely, feel-good, mushy stuff. Great. Love it. Wonderful. But after that, Rose falls off the bloom, and we get back to Roman Reigns. It's still the same guy. Mr. Too Cool for School. Nothing bothers him. No fire, no passion. The silent but deadly type. The guy that just does his talking in the ring. We've seen it. We've seen this for years now. It's time for a refresh. Of course, I'd want them to turn him heel, but if that's not in the cards and Vince McMahon would fire any writer that brought that up ever, then let's refresh who he is. Don't 180 it, just refresh his music, his look, his style, his promo abilities, or his range of promos, his content of promos. Something needs to change. But what do I know? You know why? Because WWE had him beat Samoa Joe clean. Clean. No controversy, one spear, and it's done. And Samoa Joe, who was challenging for the WWE Championship a month ago, is now a guy that is, after a victory last week against Finn Balor, is right back down to where WWE views him. Stuck in upper mid-card hell. That's where Samoa Joe lives. The guy that you think is finally going to burst onto the scene. be that monster heel. Come to the main event. Destroy his opponents. And, he lost to a roll-up. He lost to Roman Reigns. He lost to a roll-up by Rey Mysterio. What is happening here? What's going on? What are they doing with Samoa Joe? They couldn't have had anybody else but Joe out there do this. I don't care if Roman Reigns gets a victory on Raw. Fine. Does it have to be Samoa Joe? All right. Let's move on before I continue here. And take a breath. All right. So, also, was the Rey Mysterio defeating Sami Zayn via pinfall. This match was a setup from a segment that happened earlier in the night where Zayn was berating the Legends and was challenged by Mysterio. Mysterio hit the 619 before paying homage to RVD with the frog splash. Fine. Again, I'm fine. It's just Sami Zayn has yet to win a singles match since he returned. Let that sink in. Sami Zayn has yet to win a match, a singles match, since he returned. I don't know. I don't understand. Okay. Moving along. Seth Rollins versus AJ Styles. Seth ends up defeating AJ Styles via disqualification. Again, this was nothing more than a kind of a weird alliance between DX and the NWO and the Clique, the New Japan buddies. The original Clique, which was AJ Styles, Karl Anderson, and Luke Gallows. And it ended up being all of the D-Generation X / NWO faction standing tall. No pedigrees, no sweet chin music, just the stare down between AJ and Michaels, which was interesting. I kept an eye on that to see if there was anything further that would happen from that, but there wasn't. Just a bunch of yelling at Michaels. Again, maybe something was there. I know that there was a tease a couple of years ago between AJ Styles and Shawn Michaels, and Shawn Michaels was offered a pretty hefty payday to return at WrestleMania and face AJ Styles, so maybe that's the extent of what we get. Maybe it is. You know, I don't know. All right, and then we also had a Natalya and Becky Lynch brawl on A Moment of Bliss. Natalya brings up the fact that they've known each other for so long and wrestled in Japan together, and that Lynch still shows her no respect. Lynch then said that, look, Natty, she chose to help train Ronda Rousey and to help defeat her at WrestleMania, that she still beat the little MMA friend. And it was cool how Becky Lynch referenced the Raw Women's Championship as the scalp of Ronda Rousey, as if she took a piece of Ronda Rousey. That was a really cool, strong image and phrase to use. That she just, it's almost like a trophy, you know, akin to tribal days when you would have two warriors fight and whoever lost was killed and the winner would keep the other man's head as a trophy. It sort of felt like that, kind of barbaric, but cool. Like, that's the scalp of Ronda Rousey, and it's got the shape of skin, obviously magnified times 50, right? But it felt cool, like it was a trophy of sorts, and a part of Rousey she stole. So I really enjoyed that. That was, to me, the highlight. Also, we had Braun Strowman defeat Randy Rowe. Strowman was basically there for a squash match. Nothing more than an enhancement talent, and it just didn't really do much. Honestly, you could have probably given Braun the night off, and it would have been even better. I mean, it probably would have been a better night for Strowman if he had just not shown up at all. But, they included it. We also got Seth Rollins on Miz TV, and Rollins was interrupted by Heyman, who was in Gorilla, and he came back, and he was trying to out-talk Seth Rollins, who then threatened Paul Heyman with violence as Paul Heyman scurried back like the little rat into a hole. And Rollins claimed that Lesnar is still human and he can be beaten at any time, and that's what he's going to do at SummerSlam. He then turned his focus to the matchup later that night against AJ Styles. So it was an effective segment. It was one in which, look, I don't ever want to see Paul Heyman involved in physicality. I don't ever actually want to feel like Paul Heyman's going to or is going to be involved in any kind of physicality. I don't need to see that. I remember the night that John Cena ended up bullying and keeping Paul Heyman hostage. I don't get that kind of heat with Heyman. I don't want to see somebody beat his ass. He's just too good. I want to see him on a weekly basis. So when he threatened violence to Heyman, I'm like, Heyman, just leave, please. I don't want to boo Seth Rollins because he's going to come up there and, you know, stomp your face into the stage or whatever he said he was going to do. But overall, look, I thought it was a very good Monday Night Raw. We got a little bit of Drew McIntyre. He seemed to be disgusted by the legends. Alicia Fox was backstage. Santino Marella, who brought the Cobra with him, was cool. And Santino Marella also let us know, I forgot, that his sister Santina was doing well. So that's pretty funny. I was hoping that Santino Marella would get somehow involved in the 24/7 championship with Truth. And I was alluding to that on my show this past week with my co-host. And we were hoping that somehow, some way, Santino and R-Truth would cross paths. They did not. But I digress. It was still entertaining to see them. But it was a Raw that, do I think it was the best use of all the legends? No, I don't. I don't. But at the same time, it was it was true to what the title was of a reunion. Reunion means that you're bringing family back together. That's the theme. And that's what Stone Cold wrapped up very nicely and put a very good feeling into the show that I think needed it at that point. He was able to tie the whole thing together in a nice little bow and package it for everybody in only a way that Stone Cold Steve Austin can do. Again, do I think it would have behooved WWE to use Stone Cold and Kevin Owens side by side against two disposable heels? Yes, I do. Because how often do you get Stone Cold Steve Austin, the biggest draw of all time on TV? Almost never. Almost never. I think the last time was the Raw 25, which yours truly personally attended. I believe that was the last time that you had Stone Cold on Raw. So there, you know, I would have liked them to see a little bit more focus on the current talent, where you brought the legends in and interacted a little bit more with the current talent. But at the same time, like I said, it's a reunion show. Okay, so a reunion show means that it's just bringing the old family back together, the whole family together. So I totally can see that as well. So an enjoyable Raw, a Raw that didn't drag, a Raw that had a lot of nostalgia, and we all love that. Hell, I have a segment of one day a week I do a show on nostalgia. So I'm certainly one that likes to live in the past of wrestling. And that's totally admittable by me, and that's fine. I don't have any shame in that. It was cool to see Cena back, obviously Stone Cold Steve Austin, Boogeyman and Ron Simmons and Kelly and Santino and Flair and Hogan. It was just a who's who, other than Taker, other than Brock, and other than The Rock. Hey, Rock, where are you? Please. I miss The Rock. I want to see Rock on the next All Star reunion or whatever kind of specialty night that they have, and I would love to see it, because the fact is Roman Reigns is lurking out there, and WWE teased that match. That would be a perfect time to pull the trigger. Both men can still go. Well, obviously Roman can go, but more of The Rock can still go, and no better time. Just a little bit of a nudge, WWE, because I know you're listening. Alrighty. Well, guys, I think that'll do it for me, as the Raw reunion show is now in the books, and we move on to SmackDown Live. I'll be back tomorrow night with my review, and then Thursday will be my review show, wrapping up the entire week, plus the latest news with my co-host, Mary Grader, this week. It'll be a lot of fun, I'm sure. Again, follow me on Twitter at the WWE Podcast. You can also check us out on WWEPodcast.com and Patreon.com/WWE Podcast, where you get a shout out on the show. You'll hear every single show that I have ad free for your listening experience. And again, video is coming to Patreon, but only for Patreon. So if you are interested in that, that'll be coming for you exclusively there and waiting for you. But all right, well, guys, enjoy your night, your day, your evening, your morning, whatever it may be for you. And as always, I'll talk to you next time.